Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
The following program is a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcast Network. Visit SimplyScaryPodcast.com to learn more about this and our other weekly storytelling programs. And become a patron today to show your support and get instant access to our extensive archive of downloadable ad-free tales of terror. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show.
Today's episode of Scary Stories Told in the Dark is brought to you by Killer Knowledge, the latest program from our friends at the Parcast Network. I'll be back after our first story tonight to tell you a bit more about Killer Knowledge and where you can tune in for the latest episodes of the series, which is bound to be a fantastic addition to your weekly podcast lineup if you're a fan of true crime and tales of the macabre. Now, it's time to get started, so go ahead and lock your doors and double-check under your bed. You never know what might have crawled beneath it while I've had you distracted. Stay tuned. Your weekly delivery of nightmares has arrived.
Good evening. I'm storyteller Otis Gyre. And I ain't your grandfather. From where I'm from, we don't do bedtime stories. And if that's what you were expecting, you're in the wrong place. If it's terrifying tales you're after, well then, I've got just the thing. Get comfortable. Settle in. Turn off the lights, if you dare. Your night is about to get a whole lot darker. Who needs sleep anyway?
Good evening, you're listening to Scary Stories Told in the Dark. Welcome to Season 5, Episode 6. I'm your host, Otis Gyre. In tonight's episode, I'll be performing four stories for you about dangerous doors, suspicious strangers, damnable dreams, and spiritual sacrifices. All of tonight's tales are featured in the incredible horror anthology, Daylight Dims, Volume 2, and are featured here with the kind permission of their authors. The sequel to the original and equally fantastic Daylight Dims, Volume 2 features 13 stories that cross the genres of surreal, dark fantasy, and heart-pounding dread, guaranteed to twist your perception of horror, from the common, comfortable tropes to the more taboo. These handpicked tales have a literary aspect designed to showcase what true horror can be. If you'd like to support the authors and editors behind tonight's frightening fiction, you'll have a link to the book in our episode notes, or visit simplyscarypodcast.com/daylightdims2. That's simplyscarypodcast.com/daylightdims2 with the number 2 at the end. Or simply search for it on amazon.com. You can also learn more about the books in the series at daylightdims.com. You're listening to the standard edition of tonight's program, which contains the first 2 terrifying tales. If you'd like to show your support and enjoy an extended version of this and other episodes with twice the terror, visit simplyscarypodcast.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to sign up today. Thank you for your support. Now it's time to take a walk together down the moonlit trail. So lock your doors, turn your lights down low, and settle in. The show is about to begin. Our first tale of terror this evening comes to us courtesy of author Rhodes Brazos. In it, 2 young boys out shooting pellet guns learn, too late, that some doors shouldn't be opened. Without further ado, I present to you Skeen. It was Rollo's idea to go up there, wander around a bit, shoot out some windows with their pellet guns. Rollo had a good one. It looked like a .44 Magnum. "It'll blow your head clean off," he bagged. Ping! Most of the glass had already been shattered by other enterprising youths. All 3 floors showed windows yawning and toothy, like the whole house was grinning. Though only paltry targets remained, the 2 boys took careful aim and sent more than a little debris shimmering to the weed-strewn lot. "Love the sound of plate glass in the morning," Rollo said. Eddie took a bead on a shard no bigger than a postage stamp. It popped into a spray of rhinestones. "Nice!" Rollo drew the word out with a hiss. "Like a sniper," Eddie said. "Might join the Marines after high school." He'd never considered it until that moment. "Badass! I'm joining Blackwater." "How you get in there?" "Don't know." He reloaded and aimed at his foot. "Hey, I'm a conscientious objector." A sharp snap, and the shot went through the toe of his sneaker. "And Charlie wins again," Eddie said sadly. Rollo's mother always bought Rollo oversized shoes. He wore each pair for a couple of years. By the time they fit properly, they were only held together by a sense of thrift. His mother intended these to see the next election. He should really be more careful. "Hey, inside," Rollo said. More targets, lock and load. The door had been kicked in years ago. The doorknob had even been torn loose. "Baseball bat? How would you do such a thing?" The boys milled about aimlessly and fired warning shots into the walls. Bottles littered the second floor, those boozing sophomores, no doubt. Those oafs had given the 2 of them a bad time, reciprocating the grief they themselves had endured the year before. Thus, the cycle never ended. "Coexist," Eddie said. "What?" Rollo fired another round. The top of a bottle snapped into the air, and the bottle skittered and spun. Eddie reloaded while Rollo set the target again. "Nothing," Eddie said. "Just thinking about those hippie wannabes. They were surprisingly aggressive for pacifists. Beatniks. Just copying commercials. Not like us." True. Eddie and Rollo had an inarguably unique panache. Dixie with a dash of Motorhead. "They messed you up Monday." Eddie hadn't brought up this yet. Had to let enough time pass. Rollo shrugged. "Man, I would have helped," Eddie said. "You know that." "Yeah, I know." Rollo joined him across the room, took aim and missed. He grimaced. I got your back, too. Right. Always. Rollo gritted his teeth and emptied the gun into the bottle. A few shots connected. Hey, know what we should do to them? Eddie frowned. This felt sordid. Two high school rejects doing target practice and plotting violent revenge. You fucking idiot, not like that. Rollo knew Eddie well. I mean, we should let the air out of their tires. Never work. Just the back two, leave them stranded. Someone will see us, then. Yeah, maybe so. Rollo let his gun dangle to the floor. He scratched at his head. Wish I had wheels. Have to pay for gas, too, Eddie said. Rollo grunted. Insurance? Whatever. Hey, upstairs. They creaked out the master bedroom. The fireplace hinted that it must have been such, and stalked to the center of the house. A chain hung from the ceiling. The remains of a chandelier? Probably scavenged by some shabby chic decorators. Regrettable. It would have been the mother of all targets. The boy's feet crunched over the floor. The surface of the ceiling had loosened, denuding a wooden lattice and powdering the floor below with a slick talcum. Heaped upon the mess was the rotted remains of the old stairway, which left no route to the upper story. Strange that nothing else had given away. Rollo kicked at the boards. Get this stuff up there. He sniffed and looked up at the landing. What do you call that junk they insulate with? Eddie asked. Fiberglass? Nah, the old stuff. Get you sick. Asbestos? Yeah. My uncle got it real bad from that. Well, should we? I feel fine, don't you? Rollo rummaged through the collapsed pile. Look it, he said. He pulled a long pipe loose and propped it alongside the landing so that its top rested between the banister railing. He tapped the bottom on the floor. Keep this steady, he said. Eddie held it firmly, and Rollo hoisted himself up like a fireman who'd forgotten his boots. Quit checking me out, Rollo called down, with a hand already on the banister. Shut up. Eddie stared off at the ceiling. That way, when Rollo looked back down, he wouldn't deliver a follow-up witticism. A piece of plaster slipped from the ceiling to the floor. It tumbled end over end and smacked into crumbs. Eddie squinted. There was something up there, caged behind the lattice. Just a shape, a shadow. It was... Okay, Rollo said. Got it from here. Come on. Eddie clambered up, giving only cursory thoughts to rust stains on his jeans. Hey, look. Rollo pointed at a painting in the upper hallway. Eddie wiped rust from his hands and joined him. Someone with passable skill had created a landscape of the house. The place used to be white with red shutters. It had beds of flowers, shrubs, climbing vines with inky purple flowers, and a grove of trees sentineling the lawn. There weren't even stumps out there now. Eddie traced a finger along the gilded frame, furrowing through dust, and yet... Think that's worth something? Rollo asked, rubbing his nose mightily. Huh? It's got a tear, though, Eddie pointed out. The top window was scratched through to the canvas. Maybe that didn't matter. They could still hawk it. Let's see what else there is, Rollo said. They poked about the upper rooms. They found a dresser and rifled through it. Empty, naturally. They rooted through closets. No wire hangers. Rollo whipped a fistful at Eddie. Eddie yelled. They stung bad. He hurled them back, and Rollo jumped aside, laughing. They found a couple of old books on dusty shelves, the kind you got for a quarter at yard sales. The last room's door was closed. Ah, Rollo's eyes grew wide. He rattled on the doorknob. Not locked, but push it open. I'm trying. Quit menstruating and kick it in. Rollo chuckled, strangely pleased at the insult. Vice Squad. His shoe, size 13, she'd overdone it this time, pounded into the door with a booming thud. The door pushed open an inch, but shoved back shut. Something's behind it, Eddie said. Yeah. Rollo's eyes were shining now. Bet nobody's been in there. He was right. This could be the mother lode. Cash the spoils in at Pete's Pond, and they'd snack like kings. They took turns kicking the door. After their feet numbed, they opened fire on the lock, sawdusting the floor with splinters. Not gonna do any good anyhow, Eddie said. Handle turns easy. Rollo ruminated. Those beady eyes roamed up and down the doorframe. Okay, I got an idea. They set their guns aside and returned with the dresser. It was heavy, but not overwhelming. They teetered it between them. With both of them standing alongside the door, they lifted the dresser high. They swung it in a downward arc, leaning hard with the momentum. A terrific collision thundered through the house. The door flew open with such force that its handle punctured the wall. Rollo grabbed his gun. Don't shoot it up, Eddie said. Nah. Eddie picked up his gun, too, and they stormed in. It was a kid's room. Single bed, toy box, and picture books scattered by the windowsill. Musty, like his grandmother's attic. Eddie had gone to see her once, a long time ago. She was gone now. Maybe. He wasn't sure. Why was that door so hard to open? Eddie asked. Rollo sniffed. I mean, Eddie said, nothing was behind it. Wood swollen, twisted hinges. Rollo put the book cover closed with his toe. Dick the detective, he snickered. Well, this one's for you. Shut up. Think those are worth something, like antiques? Yeah, maybe some. We should box them up. Yeah. Rollo's eyes roamed the room. Hey, you see a bank? Just pocket change. Nah, you're not thinking. Silver dimes, quarters. Hey, that's right. They began a detailed search. Marbles, a fork, more books, string, a busted pocket watch. They kept it anyway. Not very old, was he? Eddie said, holding up a pair of pants. Thin little things. He might be able to fit his arms in them, but never his legs. Rollo scratched at his ear. Drawings were affixed to the walls, not taped or tacked, but slipped over splinters in the woodwork. The kid liked drawing himself a lot. No friends, no family, just him. Kid on the lawn, kid in the room, kid on the porch, kid on the roof. We could all dream. Here was a picture of a mouse. In the next picture, the mouse was laying on its side. X's for eyes. Pink tongue nipped between teeth. Loner, Rollo said, like something you'd come up with. Eddie didn't respond. Rollo cleared his throat. Sorry. Yeah, I never does draw his parents. Must not have gotten along, I guess. Strange, the kid was so young. It's not like he had teenage drama. Eddie stared at the kid's rendition of the house. Gray with jagged windows. Rollo grabbed the end of the bedspread and yanked it aside. Yuck! What's that? The center of the bed was smeared and soiled in the outline of a person, a very small person. Sick, Rollo said. Looks like chow mein with beef. It's gross. Eddie chewed at his lip. The shape went from toes, fingertips, and up to the hairline, like one of those silhouettes they used to do in school. Lasted 100 years. Erla said. Don't even want to check under the mattress. Was gonna, too. He took careful aim at the blotch, pointing his weapon at the head. God knows they'd caused enough destruction already, but this act felt callous. Just knowing that a little kid had slept there. He'd been there so long the bed sagged around his outline, though. Wasn't there a flaw in that logic? Don't, Eddie said. One pop, then another. Rollo drilled two eyes through the stained skull. One high, one low. Huh, look at that. Like a chameleon or something. Ever seen how they look around? Rollo brought the gun back, muzzle pointing to the ceiling. Trigger at his ear. Shh. Rollo sneered and turned his head. Did you push? It was on him, blasting up from the sheets in a flapping burr. It smacked wetly into Rollo and wrapped around his head and torso. He screamed. It flowed up over his chin and reached for his mouth. Rollo spit and sputtered. He tumbled to the floor and thrashed about. No, get! Eddie fell back against the wall. A picture slipped to the floor. A little boy crying, big blue tears slinging off his face like he was a backyard sprinkler. Rollo was shouting, raking at the thing as it tried to get over his lips. It oozed up his cheeks, curled through his hair, wrapped tight around his throat, and tore at his clothes. It found purchase and began to pull. Tufts of hair and scalp spackled outwards. They stuck to the walls, and Eddie, too. Eddie gagged. The thing had Rollo's lips and tongue between. Yes, that's exactly what they were. Teeth. Tiny little mottled teeth stained coffee brown. Tendrils reached up to Rollo's eyes, each strand tipped with yellowed barbs. Fingernails. Eddie ran.
No! Ed!
Rollo's pleas melted into a gargle, like he was freshening up for the day. The two of them had been through a lot. Just 2 weeks ago, the sophomores had jumped Rollo 3-on-1. When Eddie arrived, he didn't hesitate. He charged right in. The two of them focused in full assault on the flimsiest of the three thugs, mercilessly incapacitating him before driving the next sophomore to the pavement. The third aggressor fled. But this, Eddie shot for the door. Screams and cries followed him, his own. A touch across his cheek pinched tight and tugged. Eddie jerked away like a determined fish on the line, ripping free. He dove over the battering ram dresser as the door cracked forward. This thing, the kid, was fast and had wanted him here. It had released Rollo and slung itself behind the door, stretching itself like a wad of gum, straining to seal them in. The dresser was jammed in the doorway, the only thing saving him. Knowing what it had taken to get in there, there was no possible way Eddie could open that door if it closed. He clawed his way over the dresser and tumbled out into the hallway. The door repeatedly slammed and splintered, a pounding on the floorboards behind him. Rollo. He was a mess, his face shredded, his lip flapping below his chin like a meaty apron. Strips of skin had been chewed loose, giving him the pruned appearance of a great uncle. Rollo pitched himself atop the dresser and struggled forward.
No!
He screamed. The thing had his leg. It was spindling itself around him, twining up his body.
Ed, please!
Eddie reached out, and Rollo squeezed his hand tight. Eddie wrenched back, while Rollo scuttled and scraped with those size 13s. It wasn't doing any good. He slid forward, and the thing came with him. It kept winding around his torso, his neck, and up his arms before souping into a thick gruel. It oozed closer to Eddie's hand. Eddie let his grip slacken.
Eddie, hutter you.
Eddie struggled to slip away, escape Rollo's frantic grasp. His eyes flickered from Rollo to that soupy mass. He yanked hard with his hand loose.
Ack! Rollo cried. Ed, you! Rollo, and I can't!
With another sudden jerk, Eddie fell free. Rollo lurched backwards, and Eddie bolted. The cries began again in earnest. Eddie hurdled the banister and came down hard 10 feet below, his shoe pinched tight. 2 steps across the floor, and anguish screamed up his leg. He tripped and fell, only then seeing the rotted board nailed through his foot. Rollo's cries from above reached a rabid delirium, shrill screams and howls of pain. Eddie rose to a knee, stepped on the board, and with a grit of his teeth, yanked his foot free. He sprang up and limp sprinted from the house. He loped down the front steps to the gate, where the fence's bleached bones skewered from the ground. He watched the house in that upper room, its window shattered and its frame missing. A figure stood in its outline, waving its arms slowly. Not a peep. The thing must have cinched Rollo's jaw shut. Eddie sobbed. His best friend. It was easy to hold that title. Not many vied for the honor. And he'd just left him. There Rollo was, reaching and feeling for... Eddie whispered, "Rollo!" He shouted, "Over here!" The figure turned to the window. Eddie couldn't save him, but he could give him this one last assist. "Here!" Rollo stood still. Decisions. It wouldn't be easy, but at this point, Eddie knew Rollo as well as Rollo knew him. There was only one thing the guy would do. "Here!" Eddie shouted again. Rollo charged the third-story window. He threw himself into empty space. The next morning, Eddie lay in his bed and wept. Gone, just like that. Just like Dad. One morning, you wake up and realize you're alone. Well, Mom was here, in her own way. Eddie listened to her bumping about the kitchen. 10 minutes later, and she was off to the motel. The screen door slammed like a shot. Yeah. Can't drag this out. Eddie stumbled to his feet and grasped through the hazy murk. A doorknob right where it should be. He fumbled through the kitchen, the scent of coffee and bacon so faint. He reached the second bedroom. The body would be found soon, this morning most likely. Rollo was just lying out there baking in the sun. Eddie's gun was on the premises, his footprints in the dust, blood too from that nail. Even yesterday's clothes were damning, splattered with grisly evidence. An open and shut case. Another delinquent off the streets. The worst part was the blame. He wasn't a bad person, not really. But the papers would say otherwise. The kids at school. Dad. He cried. The tears pooled at his eyes, but went no further. He scribbled a note as best he could. It was like peering through gravy. "We didn't mean to. I love..." And he was off the paper. He dropped the pen, too dejected to care. How had it found him? It had sliced him pretty good. Perhaps it followed that like a marker. His throbbing foot could have left a trail. Or maybe it just peeked through the bedroom windows until it found where he slept. He reached to his face, and it snapped and hissed. "Right." Her gun was heavier than his, more gravity of purpose. It loaded the same. He could do it blindfolded. Good thing. He wedged the muzzle under his chin.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's Angie.com.
I hope you enjoyed Skein by author Rhodes Brazos, as performed by yours truly. Don't forget the story you've just heard, as well as the others in tonight's program, are all featured in the horror anthology Daylight Dims, Volume 2, available on Amazon.com. To pick up your copy today, visit simplyscarypodcast.com/daylightdims2 with the number 2 at the end, and you'll be redirected to Amazon, where you can get a copy for less than $5. You won't be disappointed. Up next, we've got another fear-inducing bit of fiction, this one from author Jason Parent. In it, we'll meet Ramsey, who wakes in a dark room in a bed beside a stranger with a terrible headache and worse. Who is this new roommate and how'd he get in there? Stick around and find out. Before we begin, however, I'd like to tell you briefly about Killer Knowledge, the latest podcast from our friends at the Parcast Network. Now, we perform fictional tales here on Scary Stories Told in the Dark, but even these, on many occasions, are rooted in truth or inspired by real-life situations their authors have heard about or experienced firsthand. But we all know that truth is often stranger than fiction, and just as thrilling. True crime shows are popular these days, and for good reason. Who doesn't enjoy a mystery-filled romp into the unknown, fueled by fear and suspense? I know I do. Now, you might be a true crime fan, and you just might think you've heard every sordid story there is. But let me ask you, are you ready to put your skills to the test and be crowned an undisputed expert? Then try your hand at Parcast Network's new trivia podcast, Killer Knowledge. It's all the murder, mystery, and suspense you've come to expect from Parcast, now in a fast-paced, interactive format. There's never been anything quite like this before. Every Tuesday, two competitors go head-to-head to correctly answer multiple-choice true crime questions. Whoever gains the most points after 20 questions wins. Each episode dives deep into a different shocking topic from history, such as the Manson family, Jimmy Hoffa, and even the Jonestown Massacre. With each question and answer comes additional context surrounding the event, enlightening even the most knowledgeable true crime lover. You can play by yourself, challenge your friends, and prove your prowess by sharing your results with Parcast on social media. You never know, you may even find yourself in the hot seat one day. Follow Killer Knowledge absolutely free on Spotify or wherever you can get your podcasts. And if you're in the mood for even more bone-chilling programs, check out Parcast's extensive lineup of shows on Spotify by searching for Podcast in the Spotify search bar or go to spotify.com/Parcast. If you enjoy what you hear, be sure to leave the team at Parcast a 5-star review and a kind word, and let them know that Otis and the team at Scary Stories Told in the Dark sent you. Thanks so much for listening and for giving our sponsors a listen this month. Your support means a lot to both of us. Now that we've introduced you to the creepy side of 20 Questions, allow me to add another riddle to your pile of murderous mysteries with our next terrifying tome. Without further ado, from author Jason Parent, as featured in Daylight Dims Volume 2, I present to you The Exchange. Ramsey covered his mouth, but the vomit had to go somewhere. It rose in his throat and forced its way through pursed lips, spraying through cracks between his fingers, like water from a clogged faucet. Recognizing the futility of his efforts, he gave up trying to block it. What he had swallowed back down just made him sicker. He welcomed it back up. He sat cross-legged on the floor. Somewhere. Darkness surrounded him. Ramsey leaned forward and retched again. He planted his palms on the floor to brace himself, feeling soft fabric beneath his fingers. Carpet. When he had emptied what had felt like the full contents of his stomach, followed by his stomach itself, Ramsey struggled to find his bearings. Even in the dark, he sensed some familiarity with his surroundings. Incoherency submitted to grogginess. Ramsey began to form the important questions. Where am I? How'd I get here? He concentrated hard. His brain pounded from the effort. It thwarted his efforts to retrace his steps. He scanned his surroundings for clues, but the darkness was all-consuming. He'd have to rely on his other senses to make sense of his situation. Wherever he was, it was warm and quiet. He dragged his fingers along the carpet, a rug below him, no stars above. Ramsey could comfortably assume he was indoors, but where? In his stupor, could he somehow have made it home? The fabric beneath him was soggy, not just where he'd thrown up, but underneath his buttocks. His skin radiated heat, feverish. Ramsey thought to rub his vomit-coated hands on his jeans when he discovered he was no longer wearing them. He was naked from the waist down. His hands would have to settle for the rug. He grabbed his T-shirt, letting out a breath of relief, as if this minute symbol of familiarity was enough to dispel his incomprehension. It made his sitting bare ass on the carpet in the dark, covered in his own puke, somehow seem a bit more normal.
Ramsey!
Huh? Ramsey sprung to his knees, his arms slashing at the air in front of him. The voice, like a whisper on the wind, flowed into his ear. Its presence startled him out of his fog. Who's there? Ramsey waited for a response, but none came. His head felt like a bomb had gone off inside it. Panic, and along with it the sudden urge to flee, thrust his heart into overdrive. He leapt to his feet. Just as quickly as he had risen, he came crashing down, his head connected with the ceiling above him, knocking him off of his feet and flat onto his back. Now he saw stars above him. His dizziness and pain clouded his reasons for jumping up in the first place.
God damn it! He yelled.
He rubbed his head. A bump had already appeared where his head had met the ceiling. My room, he thought, anger replacing fear.
Fucking sloped ceiling.
Though it wasn't much to go on, it was enough for Ramsey. He was certain he was home. He stood, this time slowly, and stumbled into the dark to where he knew the light switch would be. Reaching out for the wall opposite the slope, taking baby steps toward it, Ramsey moved unimpeded. He found the wall, which he followed to the door and the light switch beside it. He flicked it on, and his bedroom illuminated. The lights sent flashing pain behind his eyes, so harsh he had to close them. After the pain subsided, he opened them a sliver, giving them time to adjust. Gross, he thought, glancing at the remains of last night's dinner and whatever he consumed afterward, now deposited with beef stew texture on his usually pristine carpet. The bulk of the mess, pulled in front of the cutout entranceway to the attic behind the southern wall of his bedroom. Again, he tried to piece together where he'd spent the night. Nothing came to him, but at least it hurt less to think about it. Wretch clotted his short, manscaped beard and stained his T-shirt. He followed its trail downward. A condom hung in a bunch around the tip of his penis. It appeared used. "Where have you been?" he asked it. He giggled, and a stream of drool escaped from the corner of his mouth. He wiped the back of his hand across his lips, ripped the condom off his penis, and threw it into the pool of vomit. "Yeah, I'll clean it tomorrow," he thought, shrugging. What he wanted most, needed most, was sleep. Some blank time to give his mind a chance to reboot. He tore off his T-shirt and staggered toward his bed. That's when he noticed the man in it. "Hello," he thought, already aroused by the perfectly chiseled specimen that lay atop his sheets. Exposed buttocks turned his way. "And just who might you be?" he asked softly, not expecting an answer. Ramsey's penis stiffened despite his drunkenness. His eyebrow rose as well, and he turned around. He looked at the condom he tossed on the floor, which, after a moment's debate, he decided was beyond reuse. He dashed out of the room, immediately regretting the sudden movement. A dry heave followed by an acidic burp forced their way up his throat. He entered the bathroom and stared at himself in the mirror. His eyes were bloodshot, his face a greasy, soiled mess. "Well, at least you don't have bad head," he told his reflection as he rubbed his scalp. He'd shaved his head a week earlier. Old Pipes protested with loud grunts as he turned on the hot water for a quick shower. The heat soothed his already warm flesh, sweat purifying his body, excreting alcohol from his pores. He closed his eyes. By the time he opened them again, the water had gone frigid. Still, it was barely enough to jostle him from his stupor. He turned off the water and dried himself, swigging it straight from the bottle like he had the Jägermeister several hours before. It was Jäger. Ramsey nearly swallowed mouthwash as it spilled into his mouth. He swished it around for 30 seconds and spat it into the sink. With his towel wrapped around his waist, he half walked, half staggered back to his bedroom. He threw the towel over the filth on his carpet, turned off the light, and climbed into bed beside the enticing stranger. "Why clean up today what you can possibly get this sucker to clean up tomorrow?" he thought, chuckling. He pulled a sheet over them and curled against the man. Grabbing his company's hip, Ramsey pulled himself closer, excited by the feel of hard muscle beneath smooth skin. He kissed his lover's shoulder, an almost metallic scent, like iron mixed with must and sweat, enveloped him in its thick aura. Ramsey appreciated the company. He only wished he could remember the man's name. "Brr," he said, stroking the man's tricep. "His skin's like ice. Poor thing, he must be freezing. Here, let me warm you up." Ramsey's lips moved playfully along the man's shoulder in a continuous path that led to the curve of his neck. Once there, he bit and nibbled at first, then hard enough to leave dental imprints. The man didn't so much as budge. Ramsey's penis rested like a hot dog between the stranger's buns. "This one likes it rough," he thought, his excitement mounting. He threw his arm around his lover, squeezing him closer. "Ooh," he said, withdrawing his arm from the sticky wetness in which it had landed. "You got sick, too? I mean," he stammered, then raised his voice. "You got sick in bed, too? Because my carpet's going to need a steam cleaning from what you did to it, my friend. What the hell did we do last night? Must have been one hell of a good time." The man still didn't stir. Ramsay went flaccid. Puke on the floor was one thing, particularly since he knew he was responsible for it. But in his bed, that was grossness on a whole new level. He shook the man. No response. "Come on, love. Let's get you into the shower." He shook him again. Nothing. "Damn, man, wake up!" he shouted. It was no use. His unknown lover was out cold. Very cold. Ramsay sighed. He stood next to his bed and flipped on the lamp atop an end table beside the headboard. "Wake up," he commanded, his patience thinning. He shook the stranger violently. The man fell onto his back. His eyes were wide open, their stare vacant. His chest was stained red. His throat had been cut. No, not cut, Ramsay thought. Removed. It was missing altogether, like it had been torn from the rest of his body by some wild animal. Strands of shredded skin hung beneath his chin. Inside the gaping hole, Ramsay could see the man's spine. He bit down on his knuckle to stifle a scream. His eyes darted from the bed to the floor, into each corner of the room, not really sure what they searched for. Perhaps the man's missing pound of flesh.
What happened? How?
The questions quivered from trembling lips. Who was this stranger? Why was he dead in Ramsay's bed?
What do I do? What do I do? Should I call the police?
The questions repeated themselves in Ramsay's mind, like a broken record skipping at a million miles per hour. Suddenly they stopped, his mind freezing on one question it couldn't yet face. Did I kill him? Ramsay slouched forward, near fainting, his enfeebled legs buckling underneath his weight. His heart pulsated erratically. Never could he imagine himself hurting anyone, not like that. But beyond drinking, he couldn't remember what he'd done last night, and the drinking had started early. The fact remained, a dead man lay in his bed. He tried to settle his nerves to consider the evidence he did know. He didn't recall any blood on him before he showered. Maybe he did it to himself, Ramsay thought. He shook his head, immediately dismissing the notion. Like a man could do that to his own throat. Think, Ramsay. God, it looks like a bear mauled him. Reality was hard to swallow. Ramsay had heard of people doing all sorts of crazy shit while they were drunk. Some kind of psychotic episode during a blackout. As disturbing a truth as it was, he had to have killed the stranger. No one else was in his apartment. Unless... Ramsay gasped. His mouth hung open. His nerve endings tingled on high alert. Whatever haziness had clouded his mind earlier vanished in a flash. How could he know for sure that no one else was there? When he came to, he was surprised to see the dead man in his bed. Why couldn't other people be there as well? Hopefully they weren't dead people, but maybe someone living who knew something about the man's death. Or, well, maybe someone who more than just knew something. Ramsay crept to his bureau, pulled out a pair of boxers, and threw them on. He mad-dashed for the kitchen, where he snagged a steak knife from a drawer. There he stood, breathless, listening for any sound, waiting for someone, anyone, to appear out of the darkness. Call the cops. With the thought, he reached for the phone, but his arm recoiled from its smooth plastic as though it were on fire. Suddenly, I don't know what happened to the naked guy lying in my bed, who happens to be missing his throat. It didn't seem like such a great alibi. No, Ramsey, he told himself. You'll have to handle this one yourself. Ramsey's apartment was on the third floor of a home that had predated the 20th century. It was small, not exactly loaded with places for an intruder to hide. A bathroom, a living room, a kitchen, a dining room, and a bedroom. Room by room, Ramsey systematically ruled out each potential hiding spot. He flicked on every light, opened every door. No one squatted within the kitchen cupboards. No one veiled himself behind the shower curtain. No one leapt from any of the closets. Ramsey made his way back to the bedroom, his solitude confirmed, dead man accepted. His bedroom closet was open, but no feet filled the shoes inside it. Empty, like all the others before it, only the attic remained unchecked. The door separating the attic from the bedroom was really just a square panel with a handle to pull it away from the wall. Ramsey didn't like going into the attic. He used it to store things he no longer needed. Rollerblades, comic books, VCRs, and outdated video game systems. It always smelled not quite right. Worse than a nursing home filled with old people, unable to manage their continence. The air hung heavy in there. Pink insulation, like cotton candy, sprouted in patches from the walls and ceiling. Silverfish filled every crack and crevice. Its sole light bulb, no matter the wattage he used, never illuminated the attic's furthest reaches. Though he knew it irrational, Ramsey always felt as though something watched him from those deep, dark corners. Something evil. That feeling hit him tenfold when he reached for the handle. The panel was cracked open. He stepped backward, the knife in his hand jutting out before him. "Who's there?" Ramsey asked, his eyes bulging from their sockets. If fear were a disease, his infliction ran deep. "If someone's in there, I swear to God, I'll..." With a crash, the door exploded from its resting place. It hit Ramsey in the shin, and he buckled from the pain. Quick to recover, not knowing if his life depended on it, he jumped back, eyes fixated upon the exposed entrance. Someone or something was in there, hiding in the darkness. "You come out of there," Ramsey said, the knife shaking in his hand. "Leave now and I won't call the police." A low rumble emitted from the opening, almost like the purr of a finely tuned motorcycle. But much softer, less mechanical, but not human either. Ramsey backpedaled in slow motion, barely aware of his movement. He jerked when his heel touched the floorboard. Still, his gaze never left the attic entrance. The rumble grew louder. "Fuck this!" He thought to run, but his mind was quicker than his feet. Before he could move, he heard a swishing sound, like an arrow piercing the air. A searing pain shot through his chest. He looked down to see three barbed prongs penetrating it, their points disappearing deep beneath his skin. The other ends were down the cable-like shafts, connecting the arrowheads to whatever hid in the attic. The cords went taut, tugging at Ramsey's flesh, pulling him toward the entrance. His skin tented as if he were suspended from fishhooks, the pain agonizing. He screamed but resisted the pull. He grabbed the cords, meaning to render the prongs from his body at any cost, but they were fleshy and covered in what felt like mucus. They pulsated. The tighter he squeezed, the slipperier they became. He couldn't grip them, and the more he tried, the more his hands burned. He looked down at his palms. They were raw and red. Deep grooves striped across his hands everywhere they held the appendage. He dropped onto his ass, planting his feet and pushing backward. His attacker would have to drag him every inch of the way if it wanted Ramsay in that attic. It worked. He caused a standstill. Whatever tugged him didn't stop, but Ramsay matched its action with an equal and opposite reaction. His flesh split in places. He believed that if he didn't remove those damn prongs, his skin would soon rip from his frame. But despite how bad it looked, the pain was fading. His fear and his fight faded with it. The room seemed to slant and sway. None of it, not the dead man in his bed, the prongs beneath his flesh, or the villain to whom they belonged, concerned him any longer. His lack of concern concerned him, but only briefly. The darkness of the attic was black as space, as if the light in his room were repelled by it. It seemed alive, no longer tangible, like oil, but thicker, somewhere between solid and liquid form. Ramsay's pain had all but disappeared. He stared at the black mass with curiosity, almost fascination, and began to squirm. He knew he should fear it, but he didn't. The prongs stopped pulling. Of his own will, he moved closer to the entrance. Somewhere in the back of his mind, Ramsay understood that he'd been drugged. The soft voice of his conscience still begged for him to run, but his intoxication muted it. Reason became easy to ignore, then drowned out entirely by what he could only describe as euphoria. Like a baby learning to crawl, he shuffled on hands and knees toward the door. A broad grin curled upon his face. Drool ran freely from his mouth. He entered the attic. The darkness engulfed him, sliding over him with all the comfort and warmth of a fur blanket. The attic became a safe and nurturing place, a womb. His mind surged with excitement. His heart beat strong and steady. There, in the darkness, he believed he had transcended to his purest self, left his imperfect human form on the other side of the threshold. He never wanted to leave. Ramsay awoke in his bed late in the day. With alertness came memory. He scanned his room but saw no body, no blood, no disorder, no sign that a murder had occurred there. A dream? He wondered. As sick as he knew it was, the idea that it had all been a dream filled him with disappointment. If only a dream, how could he return to it? To feel once again those amazing sensations that had claimed his body and mind. They were gone now. Normalcy returned, and with it, a sense of loss. He craved the euphoria. He needed to feel that way again. He stared longingly at the attic. The door was in place, though slightly ajar. Ramsay dismissed the dead stranger and the murderous thing that lived behind his wall. They were inconsequential figments, distractions from a otherwise blissful dream. They didn't matter. Only that dream feeling mattered, and he would never feel it again. He scratched his chest. The itch became worse. He scratched harder. His fingers came off wet. He glanced down at the source of his irritation. Three welts mounded over his heart, each the size of a quarter, and oozing a yellowish liquid. Red striation spread like an infection from the wounds. Not a dream? A smile flashed across his face. He stared back at his attic door once, hopeful and terrified. No! Dream! Ramsay! A voice called from within. Ramsay sat up in bed, drawing his covers up to his chest. For a moment he didn't move, not knowing what to do. Then he sprang from his bed
and raced out of his bedroom. At the doorway, out of his apartment, his hand froze upon the knob. "If I leave, I may never feel it again. But if I stay..." He shivered. Still, he plodded back to his bedroom, stopping at the doorway. Building up his courage, he approached the attic's entrance. His whole body now shook uncontrollably. His teeth rattled. Letting out a breath, he removed the panel from the wall. A crunching sound, like someone walking on broken glass, came from the ceiling. Ramsey's eyes adjusted to the poorly lit room. An arm hung from the ceiling, jutting from the insulation where the noise originated. It was human and dripping blood. The rest of the body must have been buried in the wall. Ramsey locked up tighter than a God-fearing virgin's legs. His muscles ached from the strain of his stillness. He dared not move nor make a sound. The arm fell to the floor. A body did not follow. Ramsey screeched. The arm was shredded at the shoulder, muscle and tissue stripped from the bone. The shoulder joint itself was missing, jagged bone fragments protruding like spears from meat inches above the elbow. Two spiny black appendages, sleek and slender, slid from the insulation. Fingers like pencils with sharp talons rising from the knuckles, extended from hands webbed by a veiny membrane. Or were they feet? Ramsey couldn't tell. What he did know was they weren't human. "Run! Oh, please, God! Ramsey, run!" His conscience screamed. All the logic in the world couldn't will his feet to move. His eyes widened, locked on this thing emerging from the ceiling. He couldn't look away. His heart nearly stopped when a face breached the insulation. Two small eyes, cropped like a bird's on a bulbous black head, peered directly at him. They were yellow with pupils like slits carved by honed blades. Ramsey doubted the creature had much use for its eyes, propped as they were over a large upturned snout with nostrils the size of fists. The skin, if that's what it was, comprising the head, was stretched thin, silvery veins visible and coursing through it, like the part of the onion just beneath its peel. And its smell, a foul odor, was far worse than the rottenest of onions. But the creature's most frightening trait, the quality that made Ramsey's stomach turn and bladder empty, was its mouth. Wrapping halfway around the creature's head, it was lined with 6-inch teeth, each one sharper than any knife in Ramsey's kitchen. They interlocked like a bear trap. The thing had no lips. Red blotches stained each tooth. Stringy chunks hung from the gaps between them. Still, Ramsey couldn't run. No matter how much he wanted to, his body would not obey. The crunching sound came from the creature's mouth, those monstrous teeth, gnashing and grinding, smiling a wide Cheshire Cat grin. Bone, Ramsey realized. This thing can chew through bone. He swallowed hard. "Am I next?" "Hungry, Ramsey?" the thing hissed through clenched teeth. Ramsey wasn't sure if it spoke the words at all, but somehow projected them. He didn't know if it was offering to share its meal or if he were the main course. One thing was certain. His body finally realized that it wouldn't be too smart to stick around and find out. Still, his legs wouldn't move. Something other than fear held them in place. Looking down at his feet, he saw one of those cord-like things coiled around his leg.
When and how it had happened, he didn't know. It ran along the floor like an innocent-looking wire, disappearing into pink stuffing. The part around his leg didn't look innocent at all. Its prong quivered like the back end of a rattlesnake, threatening to pierce his thigh.
"What the fuck?"
he screamed. The wiry tentacle wrapped like a tourniquet around his shin, twisting his ankle. He heard a cracking noise, and sharp, violent pain shot through nerve endings from his leg to his brain. His eyes blurred with tears, but he would not give up. Ramsey struggled fiercely to escape. As he twisted around his bound leg, he fell, smashing his shin against the floor. He landed where his filth had been, its bitter smell wafting into his nose. He tasted blood, the least of his worries. The thing tugged at him. If there had been any slack left, it tightened, the tentacle cutting like piano wire into his calf. His fingers clawed at the carpet. The nail on his index finger caught in the rug. There it stayed, ripped from his finger, as he slid into the attic. At the entrance, he reached for the wall. For a moment, he braced himself. His fingers latched onto each side of the door frame, but the thing kept pulling, raising his body off the floor so that he was parallel to it. The thin wooden wall began to splinter beneath his grasp. It would not support him much longer. But he didn't have much longer. Ramsey's fingers slipped. Then they let go.
"No!"
he yelled.
"Help!"
He wriggled like a fish on the end of a line. The creature kept reeling him closer. 8 feet into the attic, nearly at the back wall, it stopped. Ramsey collapsed. His cheek rested against the dusty floor. A silverfish scurried away from him. The creature still had his leg, but the coils loosened. Ramsey knew it was above him. He could hear it still gnashing. It smelled of decay, like prying open a coffin after centuries left undisturbed. It smelled of death. Ramsey propped himself up upon his forearms. He imagined the thing's mouth opening wide, his foot disappearing behind the rows of teeth. The gnawing would follow, the unimaginable pain of being eaten alive, feet, then ankles, then shins, and so on, until his body went into shock or he bled out. If death was coming, he would not be ready for it. He closed his eyes and prayed. Whatever would happen quickly, but knew that what would come would seem like an eternity. But nothing happened. Why hadn't this creature sampled its prey? What was it waiting for? Ramsey summoned the remainder of his courage. He spun on his back, ready to meet the tormentor face to face. He opened his eyes. The creature stared down at him. Blood dripped from its teeth into his mouth and onto his cheeks. Its hand, feet, appendages shot forward, pinning Ramsey's arms to the floor. Then it lifted him as though he weighed less than nothing, so much strength in its seemingly frail frame. It drew him within inches of his face. "Head first?" Ramsey thought, a part of him thankful that at least it would be quicker. Sweat beaded on his forehead. His horror stuck all fight from him. For a second time, liquid warmth spread across Ramsey's groin. Something writhed like a worm along his stomach, passing his navel and heading toward his chest. It felt like rubbery calamari covered in clam sauce, only this clam sauce was black as squid ink. When it slid over his chest, a barbed prong appeared before his eyes. It rattled between his face and the thing to which it belonged. As if it were a cracked whip, the tentacle and its arrowhead-like point thrashed lightning-quick to Ramsey's left, disappearing out of sight. It returned a half-second later. the prong delving into his jugular. The wicked monstrosity that hovered over him remained, but the walls and ceiling soon faded into darkness. All Ramsay could see was the creature's face, surrounded by swirling black pools of that not-quite-liquid, not-quite-solid substance. Plasma, he thought. Like milk gone bad or curdled blood. His fear vanished. That vile weaponry, the thing called teeth, was close enough to kiss. Yet Ramsay's terror had become a fleeting memory. More than that, he began to feel incredible, then euphoric. The creature had once again elevated him to heaven. He smiled, staring the creature dead in its mouth. "Are you going to eat me?" he asked, his tone as innocent as a child's, his tongue slurring the words. "No, Ramsay." Ramsay struggled for clear thought. It took some time, but his next question slowly spawned from the muck. "What are you going to do to me?" "More." The creature's voice hissed, from only God or perhaps less a holy power knew where, its mouth still feeding. It released Ramsay, but he remained suspended in the air, the plasma substance pillowing around him. The creature picked up the remainder of the arm it had been eating and threw it against his chest. It bounced off Ramsay and fell into darkness. "Goldies for goldies." His forehead scrunched into rows of wrinkles. After a moment, they smoothed. His mind was hazy, but Ramsay thought he understood. "If I bring you more goodies, you'll give me this feeling in return." "Yes, Ramsay." Maybe it was the drugs talking, but at that moment, the proposition didn't seem so terrible. Ramsay was feeling superhuman, omnipotent even, euphoria no mortal could comprehend. In comparison, human life seemed so infinitesimal, valueless. How could he go back to his insignificant existence? He needed to feel what he felt, to maintain it, to make sure it lasted as long as he could. Forever. This thing wanted to deal. As the blissful tingling surged through his body, raising his senses to a higher plane, invigorating his very soul, Ramsay easily justified what was being asked of him. "But what will I think when the drug stops working?" "Never has to." "Never?" Ramsay wondered. His smile grew wider still. His connection with his creature was so complete that it could even read his mind. How could such a powerful connection be anything but righteous? His decision was made. The creature nodded as though it already knew as much. It seemed content. Their bargain struck. Ramsay knew what that meant, but he didn't care. He exchanged one life. No, as many lives as it would take for continuous access to this private utopia. "Oh, I guess I'll be going out again tonight," he thought. "Fair trade." I hope you enjoyed The Exchange by author Jason Parent, as performed by yours truly. I'd like to personally thank you for joining me for this episode of Scary Stories Told in the Dark. If you enjoyed what you've heard, please take a moment to stop by our iTunes page or wherever else you listen to your favorite podcasts and leave us a 5-star review and a kind word. It makes a huge difference and would mean a lot to us. If you'd like to hear a premium extended edition of tonight's and all of our other episodes featuring twice the terror, visit simplyscarypodcast.com today and click the patrons link in the menu at the top of the screen. You'll find yourself at chillingtalesfordarknights.com, where you can purchase a season pass for this podcast and our other quality storytelling programs. Or become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to our entire audio archive dating back to 2012, all of it ad-free. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all of our latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with us each and every week. You can subscribe to me on YouTube as well at the Otis Gyre channel, where you'll find releases of my series, Horror Story Time, dating back to 2014. And you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram too. Just search for Otis Gyre. Finally, thanks again to today's sponsor, Parcast, with their latest true crime-themed trivia podcast, Killer Knowledge, for their support of this show. Don't forget, you can check out Killer Knowledge every Tuesday. Follow the program free on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Or check out Parcast's extensive lineup of shows on Spotify by searching for Parcast in the Spotify search bar. Or go to Spotify.com/Parcast. Once again, if you enjoy the programs, be sure to leave a 5-star review and a kind word to let Parcast know that Otis and the team at Scary Stories Told in the Dark sent you. Thanks again for listening and for giving Killer Knowledge a listen this month. Your support means a lot to both of us. And don't forget, all of tonight's tales are featured in the horror anthology Daylight Dims, Volume 2. But tonight's program featured just a handful of the terrifying tales you'll find in the complete illustrated book. So what are you waiting for? Pick up your copy today of the book readers are saying scared the bejesus out of them, and it reminds them of the old Alfred Hitchcock paperback anthologies they read as a kid. Once again, you'll find a link to the book in our episode notes, or visit simplyscarypodcast.com/Daylight Dims 2. That's simplyscarypodcast.com/Daylight Dims 2 with the number 2 at the end. Or simply search for it on Amazon.com. You can also learn more about the books in the series at DaylightDims.com. Thanks very much for your support of indie horror and our featured authors. Until next week, stay spooky and get some sleep. If you can.
Thanks for listening. You've been listening to Scary Stories Told in the Dark, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcasts Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com today to learn more about our network and our other amazing storytelling programs. Tonight's program was hosted, and its featured stories performed by yours truly, Otis Gyre. Selected stories have been adapted with the kind permission of their respective authors. Original music provided by Luke Hodgkinson and Jesse Cornett. Sound design and final mixing and mastering provided by executive producer and director Craig Groschek. Program's artwork and logo by David Romero. If you're looking for some fresh tales on a daily basis while waiting for the next podcast, check out my YouTube channel, the Otis Gyre channel, and my extensive collection of narrated tales there. Simply search on YouTube by my name and you'll find me. And don't forget to subscribe and press the bell notification icon to get my latest releases. Got a scary tale of your own that you'd like performed? I take submissions. Email it to me today at otis@simplyscarypodcast.com to have your terrifying tome considered for production in a future episode of this show. That's OTIS at simplyscarypodcast.com. If you've enjoyed what you heard on tonight's program and are joining us on your favorite podcast app, subscribe to us to be sure you never miss an episode and leave a 5-star review and a comment. Your feedback means a lot to me. You can also follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights and yours truly on Facebook to connect anytime and get the latest updates on this and other programs and my channel. If you're listening on the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights YouTube channel, do us a favor and hit the subscribe button and the bell notification icon for CTFDN as well to get more spooky tales from me and the crew and another episode of this program each and every Wednesday. And don't forget to hit that thumbs up button to tell us how we're doing and leave a kind word or a request. And don't forget to visit us at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com and consider supporting the team by becoming a patron. In addition to helping us out, you'll get exclusive access to our audio archive and ad-free downloads of all your favorite stories, including those you've heard on this program. As for me, I'll be back next Wednesday with more terrifying tales to keep you up all night. But that's all right. Who needs sleep anyway?
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.